Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio's Convention Center is undergoing a $325 million transformation with a 514,000 square foot of exhibit space being built there. According to the city, this expansion will create uniform quality throughout the facility, contiguous exhibit halls, more uniform meeting space. It will modernize the facility to meet the market's current and future needs, and the Convention Center's expansion will bring San Antonio's prime contiguous exhibit space from the 22nd largest to the top 10 among comparable cities nationwide. Will the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center deliver in terms of more and bigger conventions and tourist dollars to the local economy? We invite you to call in. What do you think about San Antonio's convention center? Do you think that San Antonio is betting too big on convention centers? Do you think it's working out for us? The number to call is 210-614-8980, 614-8980, or you can email us at thesource@tpr.org with your questions and comments, and write directly on the show page on the website at tpr.org. Our guest, Henry T. Sanders, is very doubtful about the outcome, what's happening with these convention centers nationwide, and he's the author of the book Convention Center Follies: Power, Politics, and Public Investment in American Cities. He's also professor of public administration at University of Texas at San Antonio. Professor Sanders, welcome to The Source.
Thanks, David. It's nice to join you this afternoon.
So you write in the book that there is a circular logic that's being used, and a circular logic is a bad thing for people, that they give it to these cities, tell them if you build these great big convention centers, then these conventions will come and you'll make money and you'll revitalize your downtown. And you poke holes in that, saying there has to be some follow-up scrutiny and all these promises, not so much in coming true, right?
Well, that's been the history in lots and lots of cities over the last decade or two, and we've seen it happen over and over. We've seen it happen right here in San Antonio, and we've seen it happen in a great many cities, including those that are historically the most successful convention destinations in the country, places like Chicago, Orlando, New Orleans, Las Vegas.
So those are the cities that everyone wants to be. San Antonio wants to be in that category. And so that's why they're building. You look downtown right now, we've torn up streets, Market Street's torn up right now. There you see the bulldozers and earth movers running about trying to get ready for the next phase of the convention center.
Well, you know, you started out with the intro, and let me nail down this
okay.
a little bit. Our convention center is pretty mid-sized as it stands right now before the expansion's completed, at about 440,000 square feet of exhibit hall space. And the center itself has ballroom and meeting room and hall space. If you've been in there, it's an enormous expanse. But we compare centers based on their exhibit hall square footage. So we're now at about 440, and we're going to get to a little over 500,000 square feet with the expansion, in part because we're going to knock down that old part that's closest to Alamo Plaza and Alamo Street. So this is a very modest expansion as those things go. We're not adding a whole lot of space. A little over 500,000 square feet we can compare to some of those cities I mentioned. For example, McCormick Place in Chicago tops the list. They're at 2.7 million. Las Vegas and Orlando, they're both at about 2 million.
So 2 million what?
Square feet of exhibit hall space. So their centers
are 4 times.
So we're
coming in at a quarter of that.
Oh, yeah. We are in the great scheme of things, a pretty modestly sized center. Dallas and Houston are both at about 1 million. So in that league, in terms of just square footage, no, we're not in the same league at all. But we also know what's happened in those cities, and we know what's happened here. And what's happened is you spend the money and you build more space, and you don't necessarily get any more business. That's what's happened pretty much everywhere. Even, as I mentioned, in places like Las Vegas and Orlando, they're perfect examples. Those are places, as you mentioned, that are really prime visitor destinations beyond just their convention business. And in Las Vegas and Orlando in the early 2000s, they both doubled the size of their convention centers. So what happened? Did their business double? No. Did their business go up by 50%? No. Did their business go up by 30%? No. In both those cases, having doubled the size of their centers, they're doing last year just about the same business they did in 1999 and 2000 before the expansion.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about convention center follies, public power, politics, power, and public investment in American cities. Our guest is Haywood T. Sanders, professor at UTSA. Let's get Alex on the air. Alex, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. Hey, Alex, you there?
Hi.
Hey, Alex. Go ahead.
Hey, my name is Alex Clark. I live here in the city, and I've really noticed that San Antonio has become a big part of state politics, but we don't have the kind of capacity to have the Republican Party or the Democratic Party host their conventions here, let alone be considered for an RNC or DNC visit. I think that especially as some of our local stars on both sides continue to climb, it would really behoove us as a city to be able to handle that kind of event.
Okay, Alex, thanks for that call because you bring up a great point. Appreciate that. So that's always seems to be the thing everyone wants. You want the big national convention, but you write in your book that to get those big national conventions, you really got to make a lot of concessions.
Well, let me do two things. If I might deal with what Alex Rose brought up, I think what Alex was talking about were the major national political conventions. Mm-hmm. And those conventions, the Democratic and Republican quadrennial conventions, require a bunch of things, lots of hotel rooms, transportation. They typically will take place in an arena. And in our case, we're something of a deficit given where the arena is relative to the convention center. But just
you
to make
the
point.
The Alamo Dome.
No, I meant the arena. It might actually use the dome instead. But arenas tend to be better given their configuration for convention events.
So you mean Cleveland, like the AT&T Center?
Right. Cleveland was just awarded the
Republican
National.
Yeah, but that was based
National,
on politics. Well,
of course, but that's the point. Their convention centers, under 300,000 square feet. They're far smaller than what we have now. What's going on in the case of the national political conventions is politics, not the size of your convention center.
Because Ohio's the swing state. Everyone's
right.
After.
And we're not a swing state these days. Now, you did mention, David, the issue of incentives and the competition for conventions. And that's what we see right and left. Every major city in the country going after the rotating major national conventions and even a great many smaller ones now have dedicated funds they use to write off convention center rents. And not only do they give away their centers for free, they typically pay cash, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a pop to meeting planners to hold events there. And that's what we have to do. And we're doing that in part now with the aid of some funding from the state.
So if you can get these big marquee conventions and you're willing to pay to bring them to your city, then you can have other people point to them saying, well, they came to San Antonio, maybe we'll go too.
Well, that's the dilemma because we're competing with everybody else. We've got to compete with the whole country. And if you look, much of our annual convention calendar is still dominated by state events. The state music educators love to come here every year, but they're from here.
Right. Okay. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from this break. If you've got a question or a comment about downtown development and convention center follies, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. All right, you're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. My guest right now is Professor Haywood T. Sanders, a professor at UTSA. He wrote the book Convention Center Follies, Politics, Power, and Public Investment in American Cities, looking critically at the promises that have been made about building convention centers across America, including here in San Antonio at the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center downtown, and what actually is the outcome. He's doing the follow-up work on that. If you've got a question or comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's get Carrie on the air. Carrie called in. Welcome to the show, Carrie. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm a business owner here in San Antonio, and I've gone to a lot of conferences there or events at the convention center. And while it's nice, I have a real hard time with the business model in general of having these large conventions with the freedom of information that's out there. Conventions normally serve as a way to kind of bring people together to learn. When there's more freedom of information, I have a hard time drawing the connection between spending $300 million and to further that kind of an activity. The other, and to dovetail with that, if a goal of this activity is economic development, which is always the bell cow for politicians seeking office or people trying to keep office, the city needs maybe smaller spaces that smaller businesses can use to further their business. Because if you've ever gone to a convention and rented a booth, let's say, and you need anything, a light, a cable, a blanket for your table, you know, the convention center gets you for $100 for something very trivial. And so I really feel like smaller spaces that can help medium-sized businesses hold their own events and things like that would be better where the money would be better spent. Thanks. I'll hang up.
Let me ask you a question, Carrie. So before you were talking about like non-traveling conventions, like doing things online, is that what you meant?
Yeah. So for example, I've gone to the Texas Dental Association meeting, which has a deal here every year. And when you go to it, my clients attend those meetings and I ask them, what was the net benefit you received from taking the time to come down here? And they said, well, a lot of the information that's presented in the breakout sessions or even in the general kind of expo where you have products and services being demonstrated, a lot of that can be found online on my own time without having to go through the expense and time to come down and attend that. So the business model itself has maybe faded, in my opinion, with you know, just the amount of information that's available for free via the Internet.
Okay, Carrie, thanks for those comments. We appreciate that. So, Professor, are conventions really not really that practical to begin with?
Well, what we've seen is a real, what I would argue, sea change in the convention business and in convention attendance. And your caller, Carrie, points to the Texas Dental Association event, for example. I mean, we've seen this happen across a whole host of event categories, but the American Dental Association will be meeting here later this year, as I recall. RCVB has them on the books for an estimated attendance of 22,000. And yet, when I look back in 1998, the American Dental Association had 47,000 attendees at its convention. It had, when it met in Las Vegas in 2006, 40,000 attendees. Now, it's not like dentists have disappeared. It's not like, you know, the advent of technology or the iPad has changed having to get your teeth taken care of. But what we've seen year after year in the case of the American Dental Association meeting and a host of others is attendance shrinks. Now, what that says is not that dentists aren't interested in the latest technology or education, but rather that things have changed. As Carrie said, there are other ways to gain education, other ways to find out about new things and new products. And getting on an airplane and traveling hundreds or thousands of miles and staying overnight in hotels is not necessarily the most efficient or indeed popular way to do those things these days. And that makes a difference. The event's still happening. The dentists will be here. But they'll be here in far smaller and fewer numbers than they used to be.
Now let's talk about how these convention centers are normally financed. Here we have in San Antonio this hotel-motel tax, which everyone pays for when they get their hotel room. And then they get that money is dedicated to having to serve the tourist industry. You can't just use it to pave roads and to pay for salaries and operational costs. It has to go directly towards the maintenance of the tourism industry, right? And bricks and mortar.
Well, no. Actually, the state statutes have four specific requirements that hotel occupancy taxes are dedicated to. One is building convention and civic facilities. The other is operating and paying for the local convention and visitor bureau and marketing. They can be also used for the preservation and enhancement of historic sites and structures. And it can be also used to support arts and culture. And we do all four with hotel
occupancy
taxes. Right,
the Tobin Center is some of that.
Well, the principal financing of the Tobin Center is with the county venue tax, but that includes a hotel occupancy tax as well. So it's not that the hotel occupancy tax here is just dedicated to the convention center.
But there is money for that there.
Absolutely. But part of the interesting thing, David, this time around is the expansion, the $325 million expansion of the HBG that you mentioned in the intro. It's actually being backed by essentially the city's general fund revenues. It's not just being backed by the hotel occupancy tax. And that's part of what's intriguing about the financing on this round.
Okay, let's get Shelly on the air. Shelly called in. Hey, Shelly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, Shelly, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I belong to a professional organization. We do a lot of hands-on activities, American Physical Therapy Association. We're having to consider the size because we are growing every year in our attendance at our national conventions. And San Antonio is hanging the edge. If they step up a little bit, then we are able to continue to work with them. And San Antonio is a favorite destination, so I'd hate to lose that as a destination.
Okay. All right, Shelly, thank you for calling in. So Shelly brings up the fact that San Antonio is a favored location for people to have events. We certainly have some sort of advantage as opposed to other places in the country. Like you mentioned off the air that you were talking to folks in Appleton,
Wisconsin. No, I don't want to denigrate San Antonio as a destination. It's a perfectly pleasant destination. But there are a great many destinations out there. And when you are in this competitive environment, each of those destinations is offering its own host of incentives. Now, they're about to do a major expansion in Boston at a cost of $1 billion. The state legislature approved the initial legislation. It's expected that the governor will sign at the end of this month. Is Boston going to see a 40% increase in attendance? How about Philadelphia? Philadelphia just expanded its convention center in 2011, as did Indianapolis. Nashville opened a brand new convention center a little over a year ago. Cleveland opened its brand new convention center. Last year, we've got expansions on tap in San Diego. That's a place people like to visit. There's an expansion on tap. They'll probably be approved by the city council in Anaheim, home of Disneyland, tomorrow.
So is there enough national need? Is it built up capacity?
No. The demand is way below the supply. From 2000 to 2013, David, supply of exhibit hall space around the U.S. expanded by 37%. Demand has been essentially flat. And so the result is lots of major cities, as the Las Vegas and Orlando cases I mentioned, they've expanded and seen no increase in business. Others, like Chicago, have expanded, and now they're doing about half the business they did early in the 2000s. So the norm is you do an expansion, and you can build a building, and you can spend the money, but you're not necessarily getting any new business. And that's what we've done. We expanded in 2001 with the argument it would boost our business. Then we built the publicly financed Grand Hyatt next door with the argument that that was going to yield a substantial, almost 50% increase in our convention center business. That hasn't happened to date, and it's not likely to happen going forward either.
Okay, another caller to join the conversation, Rick. Let's get Rick on the air. Rick, welcome to The Source.
Hi, nice to be on the air. You know, I'm a long-time listener. I was just agreeing with the professor. When I went to school in Waco, Baylor, they did a expansion on their convention center. And while, you know, there are many, many factors that are different between San Antonio and Waco, I think one key factor is that there are so many venues here in San Antonio that you can host an event at. And there are many that are doing their own kind of additions, like the Frank Municipal Auditorium downtown, which is where I kind of walked the stage at high school. Last time I checked, they were making the auditorium much bigger and fancier. And just other venues, like the UTSA has its own venue. The Alamo Dome, AT&T Center, if you ever want to do something there. Mm-hmm. And there was one more. But there's venues all across the city that you can hold a
okay. All right, Rick, so thanks for calling in. So is that a plus, having all these different venues, places people can use to hold events?
Well, it's some advantage for us, but at the same time, a great many other cities have similar kinds of venues. And what we find here is it makes the situation for state and local events, particularly the mid-sized ones, one of your earlier callers mentioned, far more competitive. It's a situation where it's just very tough for us to make any real headway.
Right, but I was just downtown this weekend several times, had to go, and it's just packed with people, teeming with people, just doing stuff. So
we've always had a really substantial leisure visitor market here, David, and we likely always will. The Riverwalk and the Alamo itself are great draws for San Antonio. But that doesn't mean that as a convention destination, we'll inevitably and invariably succeed.
All right. And so you're just asking people to be a little more skeptical when they come up with these pie-in-the-sky projections.
The next time you see an economic impact statement that promises billions of dollars in your pocket, you need to ask a whole lot of questions.
All right. Professor Haywood T. Sanders, he's over at UTSA, Professor of Public Administration. The book is called Convention Center Follies, Politics, Power, and Public Investment in American Cities. This is The Source on KSTX.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.